This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who want and are dreaming of writing. And right here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am really happy today. I have in the studio with me an author who, well, she makes me laugh, and I love authors who make me laugh. And her name is B.J. Lee, and she has a beautiful, beautiful picture book called There Was an Old Gator Who Swallowed a Moth. Hi, BJ.
Hi.
Okay, well, I'm so happy to have you here today because I've been really interested in helping authors who are interested in writing books for children that, you know, books for children are very, very important because we want to get kids reading at an early age and loving it. And I know that when kids read this book and when parents read this book to kids, they will love it.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, before I start talking to you, I just want to mention a couple of things. Valentine's Day is coming up, and I have told all of you over the past 3.5 years that I've been doing this program that one of the really joys of life is to see your words on paper. And there is a book in all of you. And I had an author on not too long ago whose book is called Love Poems for Dodie. And it's written by Joe Callahan. I was so impressed with this little book because it is not one of these books that's going to be a bestseller. But what is so touching about this book is that he has put together the story of his love for his wife, Dodie. And it is something that I hope would inspire you to sit down and do the same thing. We all have the story of our, you know, if you have a love in your life, and whether they are here with you or whether they've gone on to another place, it's something that you want to have for your family, the memories of those times. And what I love about Joe's book is he includes in here Dodie's wedding vows to him. And in it, she says, as you can see from those invited and present, I couldn't wait to tell everyone about you and how these past 9 months, when God supernaturally put us together, have been the happiest times in my life. And at the end, she says, it's not good for a man to be alone. I will make him a helper, a companion. How happy I am to be your companion in life from this day forward. So those were her vows. And, it is so beautiful to have this, for a family to have something like this to hold in their hand, you know, years from now. And then Joe has his wedding vows in here, which are very touching. And right across the board, he's written some poems for her, and I'm so happy that BJ is here today because she is a poet. And, you know, your poetry doesn't have to be perfect, but if it has soul, if it has love, if it has joy, right? It is wonderful. And so I hope that all of you would just, you know, the book doesn't cost very much. It's not a big book. It's called Love Poems for Dodie, and it's written by Joe Callahan, spelt with an I, C-A-L-L-I-H-A-N. And he has little stories here, stories that his family will love to have and treasure for years. But I think that all of you out there, if you get this book, it will inspire you to tell your story in your own way. You might not be able to write a poem, but you can tell little stories, the sweet things that have been done. You can include, speaking of sweet things, you can include recipes of your favorite foods. You can talk about all of your different adventures, where you've traveled. All of these things are precious. One of the things that, as somebody who is interested in history, I appreciate so much are the books that were written by people who traveled, particularly British people who traveled all over the world. And they would write these little books that they would write actually for their families. They weren't big bestsellers, but these books preserved, the history that otherwise would have been forgotten. I have one of the most wonderful books that I have is, it was written by somebody, actually she didn't even put her name in the book. She just put her initials, sort of like BJ here. And she tells about everything that happened in her life in India. And I'm talking about how much she paid her servants, where she got the food, about the fact that she had to fight with her cook. How to kill a turkey, because let's say in those days they had a very strange way of killing turkeys, and so she had to teach them how to kill a turkey properly. But all of these are just fun stories that nobody else wrote down. She wrote it down. I bet you could not find this story in any other book. And about how one of the servants would wash her best spoon china with his feet. So it's all of these little stories are so delightful. And so I would really like to recommend that you get love poems for Dodie. I think they will be really inspirational to you. And now, talking about poets and poetry and wonderful books, tell us about your book.
I wrote a picture book. It's called There Was an Old Gator Who Swallowed a Moth. And this book is published by Pelican Publishing. And I'll read here from the back cover. And it says, growing up in the Northeast, author B.J. Lee had only seen gators in the Bronx Zoo. When she moved to Florida, she was so amazed to see them swimming in lakes and basking on shores that she simply had to write a book about one special and silly gator.
Well, you certainly did. I was laughing out loud when I read this story.
Thank you. It is, and on
so many levels, this is an example, if you are writing a children's book, of what you want to aim for. This is a beautiful book. The illustrations are beautiful, and it is done in rhyme, and the rhythm is just perfect. I am so impressed. Now, this is her first picture book. She's been in a lot of National Geographic books, right, with your poetry?
A lot of different children's poetry anthologies.
And it is really inspiring to see an end product like this. You are very lucky that you're very talented, and your talent got you a publisher who really appreciated what you did and got you one of the best illustrators I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, he is quite astonishing. His name is David Opie, and I'm just stunned by it, because very seldom does somebody who get their first children's book have an illustrator on this level. He is brilliant.
Yeah, I agree.
Tell us, how did you get this published? How did you work through it?
Well, I have a couple of works in progress with the There Was an Old Lady cumulative rhyme. And then one day, my husband and I were in Lake Seminole Park, and we saw this juvenile gator just floating in the waves, like he was riding the waves. And I just laughed, because the gators in Florida are so larger than life. And right then I thought, that's a character right there, the gator. And so I came home and I took out my works in progress, and I started this one, and I put those on the back burner. Then when I was finished, I thought, well, this is really a regional book. And so I targeted a regional publisher, which was Pelican Publishing, and they snapped it up.
And they're in?
They're in Louisiana.
Louisiana.
Gretna, Louisiana.
Well, they obviously know what they are doing, because it is on the highest professional level I've seen, and I've been getting a lot of children's books, but I was so thrilled when I first heard, you know, when you first contacted me, I thought, well, you know, I'm looking into it, but wow, when I saw this, I thought, wow, everybody out there, if you are looking for, I often recommend Eileen Spinelli, who you know, because I love her books, her picture books, and you certainly are on a level with her. And what I love about your writing is it's rhymes, the style of There Was an Old Lady. One thing after another happens, but I love that you do not, let's say, dumb it down. You use big words, and you use words that I find so often in the children's books I've been getting that they're really sticking to the Dick and Jane words. They don't go outside that box with the mistaken belief that, you know, they have to keep it simple. But we don't want to keep it simple. Beatrix Potter never kept it simple. Her words, if you go through her vocabulary, a vocabulary study list of her words, they are what we would consider, you know, adult words. But they work. And children learned. And this is how children learn, because skittered and scuttled. You know, where are some other words that you used? I love that you just have a fantastic way of putting words together with, you know, not simple. It's really great.
Thank you. There's a lot of internal rhyme, like no gator's belly can handle a pelican.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the answer to swallow a panther.
Stuff like that is just wonderful. And this is how children develop a love for words. Because if you can get kids to read at a young age and they start playing with words. Also, it's so helpful, really, to learn rhyming at a young age, because with all the, you know, it's essentially phonics when you're learning to read at an early age. And if you can I don't know, in schools so much they're doing all this whole word stuff still. I still can't believe that they don't want to go into phonics, because I learned phonics at a young age, and that's one of the reasons I read so much and so well.
Yeah.
And I like that waylay. She uses the word waylay. Now, most people wouldn't. Most of the authors that I've gotten recently would not use the word waylay. They really wouldn't. They'd say, "Oh, the kid won't understand it. It's too big. It's a high school word." We're lucky if they know it in high school.
But I questioned that word, but I felt like the waylay the eel, so it has, you know.
He swallowed the ray to waylay the eel. You
yeah,
know,
it's got the L in there for the eel.
It works.
Waylay,
it works.
The ray, way.
So. Yeah. This is what you want in a really well-written book. You want to bring it all sort of together. And I love it. And I love the illustration. My goodness, that's a great illustration of the panther. But the entire book is just, I just think it's great.
Thank you so much.
And you're going to have an event that you have to talk about.
Yes, I'm having a Gator Day at Boyd Hill Nature Preserve in St. Pete. It's down by Lake Maggiore. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right, Maggiore. And it's on Sunday, March 10, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I'll be signing books and reading the book and possibly singing the book. And there'll be crafts and... we'll have coloring books, and actually I believe that the illustrator is going to fly down from Connecticut.
Wow.
It's not a promise, but he said that he's going to try to make it.
Well, he should, because I think this is a book that, you know, it's sometimes exactly when you have a book that's really regional, it opens up so many possibilities for you to sell in so many different areas, not just in bookstores, but also in hotels, at events, the nature parks, ones who have gift shops. This is an ideal book, and one because it's just the cover is gorgeous. I'm holding it up here. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can see it. It's just amazing. And can you explain? It's funny. It's a 32-page picture book, and so generally speaking, most of the picture books I get are 32 pages, and people, I sometimes say, well, this is a gorgeous 32-page picture book. Can you explain why it's 32 pages?
I believe it has to do with the folding of the pages. In other words,
that's
right. Like one sheet, it has to do with folding it. So when you're writing it, you actually kind of have to, well, I do. I try to think in spreads. You try to think 12 spreads or at the most 14 spreads. And sometimes actually picture books can be 36 pages or 40 pages, but it comes in fours. So it's either 32.
It's printed on. It's very beautiful if you ever get to see one, the sheet where they print a picture book, because it's double-sided. And on a 32-page book, it's 16 and on one side, 16 on the other. And then when they fold it, because remember in the old days, a lot of them were just, they're folded in a certain way, and it all works out. It's so funny when you see them, because on the big sheet of paper, some the numbers don't correspond. They're not 1, 2, 3. There's a certain pattern. And then when you fold it, voila, you have... It comes out right, and it's really a lovely thing to see. As a matter of fact, now this was printed where? It was printed
I think Malaysia.
Malaysia. They do a beautiful, beautiful job. I'm telling you, this is, I am so impressed with this, and they've done a beautiful job with the entire production, and that makes a big difference. This is the kind of book that will be treasured. It's the kind of book that people
Thank
will keep
you.
Because you don't get this in every book. You really don't. And I just the nice thing also about it is because the illustrations are so clever that people will go read it once, then they'll go back, they'll look at the individual drawings, whether it's a dragonfly or whether it's a panther, and just study them for the fun of it. And it's one of these things where I get so thrilled when I see something so professional and so beautifully done, and it's so exciting that it's your first big book. I mean, this is going to get you noticed for sure. And when, you know, I one of the things I've been doing is I tell people that, you know, if, for example, I do want to encourage so many really young people who have come back from the war, veterans who have come back, and they need to do something. They need something creative to do. And I like to recommend to them, write a children's book. Because you don't want to, if you're coming back from the war and you have PTSD and you just have all sorts of bad images in your head, if you can get yourself out of that and write a children's book, even if it's not going to be, you know, a famous book, but if it's a book for your family, for your children, it is a wonderful thing to do. And I hope that some of you people who know people at the Veterans Hospital, we have the VA Hospital here in St. Petersburg, this is actually a very good book to donate to them, because it is the kind of book that will inspire people to say, okay, I could try this, I could write. Now, I don't think many people, I am telling you, I think that you are at a level that's incredible.
Thank you.
I was taken aback because I didn't expect anything quite this exquisite.
Wow, that's really high praise. Thank you so much.
And it is it's so fun because I know we're going to be following your career for years, because once you have this book out, people, this is going to get noticed in the industry, and I think you'll have a really best-selling book, which is nice, because some people don't realize that some of the children's books sell hundreds of thousands and millions, one book. And I've had some of the authors on who have sold like 2 million picture books. Now, this doesn't happen to everybody, but I think BJ, you have this potenial.
Wow, 2 million books.
Well, it's cleverer than some of the ones I've
Thank
you know,
you.
I don't review every children's book. I really don't, because I'm always looking for a book that I would want to read. I could sit here and read the whole thing again and read it, and how much fun I would have reading this to a child.
Oh yeah,
there's just such a great children's book has to have a rhythm, and you have to get, when you're reading to a child, you want to get into it with such enthusiasm and such joy that you can't put it down. And you say to, and even if the kid is tired and wants to go to sleep, he says, I'm going to read this to you again. wake up, you little monster. I'm going to read this book again, because I don't want to act like I'm going to go take it to the living room and read it by myself. People might laugh at me, but I can read it to you again. And that's what I'd read this book three times. I would, right in a row. And each time enjoying it more and finding the places where I could have all that excitement in my voice. I just thought it was so funny. He swallowed the crab to grab at the moth. I don't know why he swallowed the moth. It made him cough. Oh, I just love this book. I'm telling you, I love this book. I'm going to play now a book buzz. We're going to have a commercial after that, and then we're going to come back and BJ's going to talk about some of the events she goes to, where she's also about the society that you belong to, which is, of course, the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, which is a wonderful organization for all of you out there who are writing children's books. So, but first I'm going to play a book buzz that Rita Moreau did for Margaret George's most recent book, The Splendor Before the Dark. I was in contact with Margaret recently, and she is now traveling somewhere mysterious for her next book. But The Splendor Before the Dark is her second book about Nero. Her first book was The Confessions of a Young Nero. And this new book takes us from the beginning of the fire in Rome, and Margaret has an entirely different take on Nero than what we've thought about in the past, and certainly as he's been depicted in films. So I think you will enjoy this book. It's one of these books that you start thinking, well, okay, she's a brilliant historian. She did Henry VIII and Elizabeth I, and she gets into the research in such a depth, and it takes her quite a few years to come out with this type of a book. And this one is brilliant, a great read. And Rita did this book buzz, so we'll play that first.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz, The Splendor Before the Dark, a novel of the Emperor Nero by author Margaret George. Need I say more? Here's the buzz. With the beautiful and cunning Poppaea at his side, Nero Augustus commands the Roman Empire, ushering in an unprecedented era of artistic and cultural splendor. Although he has yet to produce an heir, his power is unquestioned. But in the 10th year of his reign, a terrifying prophecy comes to pass, and a fire engulfs Rome, reducing entire swaths of the city to rubble. Rumors of Nero's complicity in the blaze start to sow unrest among the populace and the politicians. Nero will either survive and be the first in his family to escape the web of betrayals, that is, the Roman court, or be ensnared and remembered as the last radiance of the greatest dynasty the world had ever known. Margaret George weaves a web of politics and passion as ancient Rome's most infamous emperor cements his place in history in The Splendor Before the Dark. Margaret George specializes in epic fictional biographies of historical figures, takes pains to make them as factually accurate as possible without compromising the drama. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions, series you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio, BJ Lee. I am so happy to have her here today because I was just in the mood for a children's book, because I'm going to be talking to several writing groups in the next month or so about children's books and some of the things that you should think about when you're writing a book for kids. And I think BJ has, like, she's hit the mark on everything. Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful story. Lovely use of words, wonderful rhythm, and just, it's just delightful. And so I'm very happy to have you here today, BJ.
Thank you.
And I'm just holding up another book. It's a Nat Geo book, because as everyone knows, I love Nat Geo books. And this is called The Poetry of Us, or U.S., Us. You have one poem in here.
Yep.
And if it's for Groundhog's Day, which is very nice, which we just had. And you've been in quite a few of these books, too?
I've been in two of the National Geographic anthologies.
Again, wonderful, wonderful anthologies for children. Always, if you're looking for a gift, Valentine's Day is coming up, and you want to give a gift for Valentine's Day, I love and I treasure books that have been given to me on holidays. I love the inscriptions when somebody will write it inside. I have one particular one that my sister gave me many years ago when we were young, and there she wrote the inscription, and I still love to look at it. And I have quite a few books like that. So it's a wonderful gift that you can give to a child, is a book that will really they will treasure for years to come. And the Nat Geo books, of course, are always one. There's a Nat Geo book for every kid, whether the kid's interested in science or nature or dinosaurs. And I've had, or wolves. I've had so many of the Nat Geo editors and authors on, because I love their books. Again, wonderful production value. And that's why I was really happy to see this book, the new book, There Was an Old Gator Who Swallowed a Moth, which has, the production value is incredible, really incredible.
Yeah, I think Pelican did a really great job, and they had asked me if I wanted to choose an illustrator. So I went about looking for illustrators, and I actually suggested two illustrators to them, but both of them couldn't do it because, you know, their agents couldn't work it out. So Pelican actually came up with David Opie, and the minute I looked at his website, I knew he would be fabulous, and indeed he was. He is fabulous.
He is really incredible, and the wonderful thing about, I mean, something like this, when an illustrator, generally speaking, they don't even ask you, kids, you know, authors for kids' books, they don't ask.
Yeah, usually.
They don't let you have any input. Even the most famous ones have no input. So that they would even ask you was very nice. They obviously loved the story, but they selected the right one.
This guy knew.
It's always important. An illustrator really has to get into the mood of what the author has written, and if they capture that feeling, in this case, the sort of delightful use of words, and he certainly did. And of course, you gave him a lot of good things to work with.
Well, he also understood my humor, and that to me is very important, because not everybody gets my humor. It tends to be a little bit on the dry side, but apparently Pelican got it, and so did David Opie, the illustrator, so I'm very grateful for that.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't describe it on the dry side. I would
maybe
a little
not
bit sophisticated. I would say it's sophisticated, because
yeah,
it is sophisticated. It's smart and sophisticated, and that's what you want your kids to read. You don't want them to read, never forget. I was just at the last phase, the end, where they were still had in the schools the Dick and Jane books. Now, I started reading, like Beatrix Potter, started reading at 3. I was reading at 3. By the time I was 5, I was reading Nancy Drew books. Certainly by the time I was 10, I was reading I was reading, you know, classics, Jane Austen and all of those classics. I had already gone through my first library visit. I went to my sister, my big sister, Natalie. I never forget that day. She walked me up the sidewalk. We had just moved to Detroit, and we had never seen a library. We came from northern Michigan, so we had never been to a library in our lives.
Oh.
I mean, we came from a small town, you know, there were, and most of the people who had books in my small town, they had paperback books. Very few people, you know, had even hardback books.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, it's a small town out in the middle of, and so I remember when we got to Detroit, and one of the first things we did is my sister took me to this McGregor Public Library. It was one of those beautiful libraries built in the 30s during the Depression, when they, this is one of the great things that happened there during the Depression. They built these beautiful buildings all over the country. And this one was particularly beautiful, with tiled floors and mahogany furniture, oak doors. And they had a children's room, and I was younger than my sister, so she could go to other areas of the library, but I was sent to the children's room. I was very young, and I, of course, I was already reading. I'd been reading for quite a while, and I started at the A's, and I went right around that entire room, and I started at the A's. So I'd already gone through Alcott. And of course, I got to Austin. I got stuck there for quite a while, you know. So, I think it's so important to have this love of reading, and it's something that will stay with you forever. And so, when somebody gives you a book like this, I think it's a terrific gift.
Thank you.
Now, you're sort of self-taught. You were going to be a novelist.
Yeah, I started writing a novel in 1991, I believe, and I wrote it over Six Ways from Sunday. I was still writing it in 2006, and I had a shoulder injury, and I had to have surgery. After the surgery, I had bicep tendonitis in my arm. To move my arm was like I was being stabbed for 2 years. So I went into a deep depression because I couldn't write. And my husband said, write poetry. And I said, I don't know how to write poetry. But I started studying it, and I started studying poetry and picture books, and then I started writing it, and 3 years later I had my first poem published. And I've had over 100 poems published now in major children's anthologies and children's magazines like Highlights and Spider, and there's one in Australia called The School Magazine. I've had poems published in there. So my poems have gone around the world, and I've worked with major anthologists like Lee Bennett Hopkins and J. Patrick Lewis. He's the one who does these National Geographic anthologies.
Well, that was, you know, it was good. Your husband Malcolm told you to write poetry, and he did a great service to all of us because you certainly taught yourself very, very well.
Thank
now,
you.
Have you done workshops? Where have any of the workshops helped you to learn how to write better, or this has just come so beautifully naturally? I don't know. How do you get to this level? Because you're so good.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I belong to the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, SCBWI. And they have conferences twice a year in Florida, and they have actually chapters all over the world. And I would highly recommend to anyone who wants to write for children to start there, because they have workshops from the very beginning, you know, how to think about writing a picture book or whatever you're interested in, chapter books, middle grade, YA, NA, verse novel, all of those. And I've been to many, many, I call it SCBWI, S-C-B-W-I events and workshops. And that would be the place to start. And I also am in a critique group called the Poets Garage. And that's where I really honed my poetry skills. And then they also do picture books in rhyme within that group. So to get yourself in a good critique group is really critical. Because, you know, I put this book through the garage and everybody loved it. So right away I knew, okay, you know, maybe some of the rhymes weren't quite right and I had to change things. But really writing is not so much writing, it's revision. You're not going to write something boom right out of the chute and have it be published. Although I have written some poems that I haven't tinkered with too much, but as far as a picture book, there's a lot of work involved, a lot of work putting it through your critique group a number of times, and then trying it out on editors and agents, and trying it out at workshops at these conferences.
Okay. We're getting drifted back there a little bit. One of the things that I'm so happy that I'm going to have David Baldacci on in a few weeks, and he started writing for children a series called Vega Jane, and it's again part of this entire process that I've been becoming more and more involved in, trying to help people who are writing for young people, because I get sort of sad when I see kids playing too many games.
Yeah.
And it's such a waste of their minds. They're playing the same game over and over. And, you know, there's a time when you're older and it doesn't make any difference anymore. You have lots of stuff in your head. And so I think those kind of games can help. But when you're young, you have to fill your head with knowledge. You have to fill your head with wonderful words and wonderful stories to think about. So I really have been very, very much involved lately in talking to writers who want to do this, reach out to children. So now have you, when this book came out, when?
This book released February 1st.
February 1st.
Of this year.
So I have a feeling you're going to be invited to quite a few events where you're going to be, like, you have this big release, and...
Yep, I'm working on it. I mean, it just came out, so I'm doing a lot of networking. I would like to try to get into schools and do school visits. And this book can also be sung because, I don't know if people remember the old Burl Ives tune that he did to There Was an Old Lady. So I've taken Burl Ives' tune and figured out the chords on piano so I can actually... I was a musician before I was a writer, so I can actually play and sing the song as well. So I hope to do a lot of school visits, particularly to start in Florida, because I think this is really very appealing to Floridians. I mean, the gator is so iconic here and so larger than life. And plus, it's a really fun book.
It is a fun book. And, of course, is it in Barnes & Noble yet?
They have ordered it. I'm not sure that it's in the physical store yet. And in fact, I probably doubt it because even Amazon is saying that the book will be available in about a month, even though it released. I'm not quite sure how those dates work. But, however, my local bookstore has it, Tombolo Books in St. Pete, St. Petersburg.
Good. Well, I'm sure that once Barnes & Noble gets their hand on it, it'll be one of their featured books on one of the tables, as a matter of fact, and you'll get to go to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a few events. I already have them lined up at the Clearwater Barnes & Noble, and I hope to do them in Tampa, also at the Barnes & Noble in Tampa.
Okay, well...
And I'm going to approach Gator World out in Orlando and the Lowry Park Zoo. I think it's called the Tampa Zoo now, and events like that.
I think, as I said, it's a wonderful book and one that I hope that will catch on and that you will be able to then use this as a platform to get a lot more books out there for kids, because that's really one of the joys of life, is to see a kid laughing when you read a story to them. There's nothing as delightful as when you read a book like this, where you can get really involved in the story and really excited about the reading, and then to hear kids laugh.
And also the love of language. I think for me that's the main thing about writing and why I love poetry, is because it's all about language. And to be able to actually go from writing poetry to writing a picture book where the language is appreciated and a publisher can like it because of the language, as you were saying before, it's not dumbed down. It really uses a lot of clever language and a lot of interesting words that kids don't necessarily really need to understand what the word means. They can get it from the context.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how you really develop your mind, and how
I agree.
How you grow as a reader. If you keep giving kids the same rhymes over and over, without introducing words, that they might not know waylay, but it fits in the story. And over the years, they're going to come across that word again, and they're going to have, whoa, I know that word. I mean, that because a kid is going to read this book over and over. This is not a book that, you know, they're going to drag it out, and they're going to say, you know, Read it, and then they'll read it themselves. So those words, when you see really words that are, nowadays we have to call them more sophisticated, because the vocabulary of our schools has really been dumbed down. I mean, since, I don't know, since you went to school, since I went to school. And that's not doing the kids a favor. It really is not doing them a favor. You want to stretch their minds. If they have to look up a word, and of course nowadays they look it up on
their phone,
which is not the same thing as looking up in the dictionary. Yeah. I don't think there's anything quite as wonderful as looking up a word in a dictionary, because then you see all the words before it and after it.
Yep.
And you see, you know, where they come from and the connection. So I'm not a big fan of this. Now as an adult, then I'm reading and I can look it up fast. But I think for young people, there should almost be a rule that they have to look up in a real dictionary.
I would agree with that, but I don't think that's going to happen.
It's not
going to
happen. But no. Well, I don't know. When I was a kid, that was one of really the most important thing that we had was a dictionary. As I said, we came from a small town, but we had a big dictionary, and we could look up words, and that's one of the reasons that we, you know, as a family became great readers. We had that dictionary.
Yeah, I was like you. I was constantly reading, and I was at a more advanced level for my age. I mean, I got to a certain point where I had finished all the books in the children's section, so they let me into the adult section early, and I would read the adult books. I wouldn't really understand what was going on, but the language, I loved the language, and that has stayed with me throughout, you know.
Well, it certainly shows in your work. And again, I want to say I'm just overjoyed to have you in today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I think you've done a fabulous job, and I feel like this, it's always exciting for me when I interview somebody who's just at the beginning of their career. And when I first started this program, I'm coming up to the fourth anniversary of Joy on Paper. And when I first started, one of my first local guests was Carol J. Perry. And she had just done her first book, and she's on her second book. And I was so impressed with her work. I was so thrilled with it. I thought, wow, where'd she come from? I mean, you know, she just came out with this almost like perfect cozy mystery. And so it's been fun over the 4 years. She's going to be on the program on February 26th for the release of, I think it's her ninth book, called Final Exam. It's a wonderful, wonderful story, and one that I think is a real winner. And so it's been fun for me to follow her along. I've interviewed her for each of her books since the beginning of the program, and I know that I'm going to have you back many times, because
fabulous.
You're going to be writing once everybody gets this out there and the whole sort of industry starts kicking in. There's going to be demand for your books, and so I will. And then
I hope so.
Now, how long did it take you to write this one?
I don't know. It's so hard to say. I mean, probably the first draft, it didn't take me very long to write it, but it's gone through many, many drafts. There were other animals in here that I tried to make work. This was actually going to be called There Was an Old Gator Who Swallowed a Skeeter, because I wanted to have the skeeter for Florida, because there's a lot of mosquitoes down here. But I couldn't make the rhyme work. And so I wanted to get an insect, and when I decided on moth with the slant rhyme cough, I thought, well, that cough can be a good climax, because something can happen with the cough. And so that's why the moth is in there. And the same thing with each of the rhymes. I mean, I had a lizard. Lizard rhymes with gizzard. And I had an ibis. I'm not sure what rhymes with ibis. I had I had some other Florida animals, too. But they just really didn't work. So I picked the ones that worked the best. And then, of course, there had to be sort of a hierarchy from small animals to large animals. But it was definitely fun to include some endangered animals, like the Florida panther, And the manatee, the manatees are in trouble because the boats keep hitting them.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, so it was actually fun to research the Florida animals and the habitats and so forth. So there's some nonfiction that goes into this too. I mean, I'm not saying the book is nonfiction. It's completely fiction. But when you're writing something like this, things have to make sense. And
exactly.
They have to be, there has to be truth behind it.
Well, that's why I'm saying it is brilliant. It really
is. Thank you.
I think it's one of the cleverest children's books I've read in a long, long time.
Wow.
And and I get a lot. I got another one. I just got another one. I keep getting them. So I do not interview everyone, but I just am thrilled with this, and I'm sure we'll have you back year after year. As long as
I think you are
at the beginning of a great career, and I think Eileen Spinellin now has like 300 books. So
we'll
see how you catch up to her.
Yeah.
Anyway, as I said, David Baldacci is going to be on in a few weeks, and we're going to be talking about his young adult series Vega Jane, and of course about his love of reading and about how he loves to help children to find books to read. So we'll be talking about that. I also want to remind you, April 1st is the deadline for the self-published author. Any book you self-publish yourself and you want to give it another go and try to find a publisher or an agent who would be interested, enter this contest, the Writer's Digest contest. The rules are there on their webpage. The grand prize is $8,000, but every book, every thing that is submitted to this contest is read by a real New York City literary agent or editor or somebody important in the publishing world, and not just the guy in the mailroom or, the girl at reception. These are professional people who know a good book. And you also get feedback from the contest. So you get some input, and it's worth the cost. And as I said, Nancy Peacock entered, and she was on my program. She sold, I think, 50 books when she self-published, and then she published. She won the Writer's Digest contest, and poof, she got a big contract. And that can happen to you, because remember, yeah, is that nice? Yeah.
Super.
So you can always, as Brad Meltzer always says, never give up and never take no for an answer. So remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really, really lucky, to have the magic words, lights, camera, action, and somebody is making your book into a film, a streaming video, or maybe on the Hallmark Channel, as I hope they will someday pick up Carol J. Perry's books because I love her work. Or maybe somebody will pick up B.J. Lee's book, There Was an Old Gator Who Swallowed a Moth, and turn it into a cartoon. How about that?
Or a Disney movie.
Disney movie. Oh, that we could do that too. Okay, BJ, thank you so much for being in
today. Thank you for
having
me.
And again, the date of your event?
March 10.
March
10. At 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m. Okay. Thank you so much again for being
here. Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.